Hey listeners, welcome to our podcast, where we drink really tasty coffee and we bring you the stories of people whose lives have been changed by God. We believe there is wisdom and learning from each person's story. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, relax and enjoy the conversation. This is Brewing Narrative.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Brewing Narrative. My name is Matt. Joined with me is Ryan.
Hey, what's up?
And making his debut on the podcast, we have James, the director.
Hello.
And if you noticed by now, we don't have Landon with us today. But one of the things that we talked about before we got on the podcast was, you know, when we do this podcast, we're not going to jeopardize our priorities. So that's what Landon's doing. We miss him. But without further ado, let me introduce you to our guest, Fernando Sucre.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
Well, Fernando, thanks for coming on the show. This is, your name has been dropped on about two or three podcasts already. Oh. And I think that just shows the kind of person you are. And we all have this awesome relationship with you. So I'm really excited and really looking forward, but I'm very thankful that you're here today.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to hang out with you guys, try some great coffee and just hang out.
Yeah. So before we go, we typically talk about coffee, and today's coffee was roasted in Casa de Hernando in San Luis, Missouri. But we did a little bit, something a little bit different today. So I used to roast coffee, and so today I roasted my own. This one's from Colombia, and the producer's called the Poras. It's, I don't know, they call it the El Bacon or El Bacon.
Okay.
I don't know. You're better at Spanish than I am.
I mean,
how do you say how do you say bacon?
Tocino.
No. But it's El Bacon, I guess.
No, but that's like, it sounds like slang, like they're like the stuff.
Okay.
That, I mean, like, because in different countries in Latin America, they use different terms, and usually the way I figure it out is by the context of like what they're trying to say. And in Spanish, when it ends with O-N, it's like you're trying to exaggerate. Yeah, for sure.
Anything with bacon is good, though.
That's true. Actually, that's a coffee idea. Put some bacon in there.
Huh. It's like bacon donuts.
Yeah.
No.
No? I mean, I don't know. But
try it.
So. Let's try it on the next episode.
Bacon donuts or bacon coffee?
Bacon donuts and bacon coffee.
Both.
Ooh.
Yeah, like, sorry, Fernando.
Yeah, I miss him.
Maybe you could come in as an audience. Speaking of audience, we have Sierra with us today. Say hi. But anyways, so let's go around the table. Ryan, what do you think of this coffee?
So you said one, you brewed two, right?
Yeah, so I brewed two on a Chemex. One might have been a little lighter. I think I was a little off on the measurements, but the second one was a little bit more on point, in my opinion.
It feels pretty dark, or it tastes pretty dark.
Really?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of getting it. I think it's still, I don't know if it's the water or maybe the roast. I'm not sure yet, but
you can be harsh.
Yeah. It tastes kind of flat. Yeah.
I would say the same thing. I think it's a bit flat and sorry, man. Just like water.
Yeah. Hey.
Maybe I already have two cups today, and if you can see my hand right now, it's actually shaking. And that's how much I drink today. But it's no fruitiness in here, so maybe I didn't drink water.
Yeah.
After I eat food or something.
Well, the taste notes from the roaster airs on the side of darker, so you wouldn't really get a lot of the fruit notes. But Fernando, what do you think? You're a coffee drinker.
So right? I think it's interesting what Ryan was talking about with the flavor, because I think the watery one allow you to feel more of the citrus kind of like touch. Mm-hmm. And then like the more stronger coffee, it's barely like there, and I know it's there because I tried the lighter version of it. Mm-hmm. So it's part of me almost wonders, is a watery version maybe better because you taste something different to it, you know?
Sure.
So I don't know. I drink a lot of coffee, but then like I think I built some tolerance to the flavor aspect of it because I've tried different things and it seems to be the same, you know?
Yeah.
But with the less coffee-ish, you get to taste a little bit more of it, I guess, because when you roast it more, it kind of burns some of the flavors.
Hold that thought. But that's a very good analogy or very good perspective that you had there.
Okay.
But we'll get there. But you can finish, but hold that thought.
Okay. I mean, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Because I kept feeling the kind of like citrus kind of flavor to it.
Okay.
You know, so, and this is more aware. And funny enough, like I'm almost done with the one that has less coffee on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. And so this one, I typically don't do on a Chemex. This is the beans I get to make my cold brew. Because the tasting notes from the producer is brown sugar, buttery, and lemon. So there's really not that, that fruitiness aspect to it. But typically when you drink Colombias, because of the region and because of the how much rain there is there too, the coffee tends to grow a little bit better, but not towards the fruity end, but more like earthy, darker notes.
Yeah, I would say it is definitely earthy.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's depending on preference and.
Sure.
I'm not too picky when it comes to coffee. I just like coffee, so
yeah.
I'm not going to say this is a bad cup of coffee. But
yeah.
And honestly, your cold brew is really good. I would say your cold brew, you usually use this bean for your cold brew?
I do.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect beans for for cold brew.
And I've had your cold brew, and I think it's definitely better than this.
Yeah.
This right here. Do you use a different bean when you, for brewing, like, hot coffee?
Typically, I usually have, like, other coffee shops beans at my house, and every once in a while, if I'm gonna roast to brew my own, I'll bring like a Ethiopia or like even a Brazil, sometimes a little bit of El Salvador or Kenya.
Okay.
But I typically love using Colombia for cold brew, and I had a little bit of extra left. I'm trying to use a little bit of the inventory so I can get some more, and I figured I'd roast it and bring it in. I'm too lazy to make the cold brew right now. And my wife gets on me every single day for it, but I figured I'd give it a try on the Chemex. This is actually the second time I've had this on the Chemex, so appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, you can actually roast some for me because I ran out of my coffee.
There you go.
I haven't had a chance to go get some yet.
Yeah.
I'll take whatever you have.
Yeah, I'll give you a goodie bag. Well, with that being said, Ryan, you have our tip of the day?
Yeah, so today we're going to talk about caffeine content. And shout out to Tony Fargash. Is that how you pronounce his name there?
Yeah, maybe. Fargash. Yeah.
Fargash. We were kind of talking about this last night. He's a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours. He was like, hey, you guys should talk about caffeine. And so here we are. According to the FDCA, one cup of coffee or 8 ounces of coffee has about 94.8 milligrams of coffee. And we were kind of looking into a light roast versus dark roast and like which one has more caffeine. And there's kind of a myth out there that light roast would have more caffeine, right? But as we were looking into this more, and according to the blog, Kicking Horse Coffee, they were talking about a darker roast loses about 90% of water, so it's less dense. And so when you buy a bag of dark roast coffee, it's actually going to have more beans in it than if you bought a pound of light and a pound of dark. The dark roast would actually have more beans than the light roast because it's less dense. And so it's really just dependent on your brewing method. Like if you're measuring your coffee with scoops, then your light roast is actually going to have more caffeine in it. But if you're measuring your coffee by weight, then your dark roast is actually going to have more caffeine. I said coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, caffeine. So if you measure it by weight, though, your Your dark roast is actually going to have more caffeine because there's going to be more beans per gram. So there's your tip of the day.
So the life hack is to get dark roast and measure on a scale.
Exactly.
All right. Life hacks.
Landon, you got that? Well, Landon is
that here. Yeah. Well, Fernando, where do we start?
Where do we?
Well, why don't you tell our listeners out there, who are you? What are you up to? What makes Fernando Fernando?
I mean, that's a broad question. Would you one like present me?
Yeah, sure. What are you up to? Like, who are you? What wife, kids? What do you got?
So I currently I work for UMSL. I'm a web developer there. I help run their website, and then I am married. I recently married, a year and a half, so brand new.
Dang, that was a year and a half.
Yeah, it's been a minute, I guess.
Yeah. No, I was thinking more like that was like 5 years ago.
It feels like it, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it feels like once you hit the year one, time starts moving a lot quicker to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, because year one, it's like, you're getting to know each other. And now, like, I mean, we still are, of course, but it's not as difficult, I guess, would be the right word.
Yeah.
So I go to church in Winsville, Crossings Church in Winsville. Currently, I'm part of a church plant team that we're planning to move to Columbia, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
We're wanting to plant a church there. We're currently going through training and all that stuff. And then we will have our first service up towards the end of November, beginning of December window.
Wow. Okay.
And then we're working on finding jobs there, where to live. Currently working on a couple opportunities that I'm having and probably most likely be driving from O'Fallon to Columbia for a month or two because I want to, you know, be able to get that job in.
In perspective, how many miles or how long is that drive?
Hour 20 on a good day. I mean, the cool thing, I guess, there's no traffic, but then you got to listen to awesome podcasts like this.
Plug.
Yeah. And so you kind of get creative and just accept the hour 20 in the car.
Well, if you're making the drive with people, it's probably not as bad either, right?
Yeah, but if you got to go to work every day,
that's true.
But good thing is I have an old car, so I'm okay putting miles in there. Like I prefer doing that rather than like a brand new car.
So funny story, actually, when Shannon and I were having our first Hudson, she was about 4 months pregnant, I think. And it was a Wednesday night, and I'm, like, getting ready to leave work. Like, I'm still at work, like, packing my bags. She texts me. She's like, I'm hungry, right? And I don't want to get into too much detail about pregnancy, but when your wife is pregnant and she says she's hungry, you better do something about it, right? And so my wife actually went to school at Mizzou to take her undergrad.
Okay.
And she has a love and a deep passion for Mizzou and for Columbia. And she's like, I want Addison's. And Addison's is a restaurant in Columbia. And so I'm leaving work at like 5 o'clock, like 4:55. And she's like, we're going to Columbia tonight. And I'm like, no, we're not. And she's like, yes, we are. Like, I need these nachos. Because that's all it is. We go there and order these appetizer nachos, and that's it. And we drive back, right?
Oh my
and
God.
So she's like, "I need these nachos." She's like, "Do it for your wife, do it for your firstborn, do it for your first son, no. do it for the baby."
Guilt trip.
I'm like driving home, and I'm like, "Man, I'm going to Columbia tonight." And we did it. I kid you not. We did it. We got there. We got there probably like around 8 o'clock. Got the nachos. Fortunately, there was we didn't hit any of like the traffic or anything. Got the nachos, paid the cashier or paid the waitress, just drove straight back to St. Louis like it was nothing. And What?
So you drive from St. Louis to Columbia.
St. Louis to Columbia, then Columbia to St. Louis that same night. I got home probably like around 2 o'clock in the morning.
So it was like a four-hour drive.
It was like 4 hours, right?
Yeah. And then I had to wake up the next morning and go back to work. And my coworkers were like, what'd you do last night? I went to Columbia. And I'm like, what? But so now you're doing that on a two times a week for this church plant, right? Right.
Well, I haven't. I've been going every so often.
Okay.
But Thursday, I usually have a Bible study with a middle schooler, so I haven't had really. I went there once, but I haven't had the chance to do it all the time. Okay. Mostly gone there on Saturday, so kind of like look around for houses, and then I've gone there for like 2 job interviews, so kind of getting used to it and all that stuff.
Sure. And I kind of want to touch on the church plant stuff, because we've talked about church plant and we've talked about Columbia already on this podcast, so it's nice to have somebody that's going to provide some feedback. But before we get there, why don't you talk about a little bit like your childhood and before you met or before you had this relationship with God that led you to eventually go on the church plant? Like, what was it like growing up where you grew up?
Sure. So for the listeners that don't know, I was born and raised in Panama City, Panama. My first language is Spanish. inside joke. Every time I say something awkward as a bailout, I always say English is my second language.
There you go.
I've been living here for 12 years, so that's not working anymore. But anyhow.
I use that time to time, though.
Nice.
Yeah. But you're not. You haven't been here for 12 years.
I've been here 5 years.
Okay.
Five years. It's been here too long, though.
It may not be working for you, though.
I mean, so five years that I've been here, I was home only a month or two.
Oh, wow.
And that's about it. Yeah, I can't afford the plane ticket.
I understand.
So yeah. My girlfriend uses that excuse all the time. So what you're saying is maybe in a couple of years I can start calling her out on it.
No, you can start now. Yeah. Yes. So I was born to... I mean, I have 3 sisters. My dad had a kid from his first marriage, and I actually got to meet her when I was 13. I did not know of her till then. And then she's 10 years older than me, and I have 2 sisters that are 5 years older than me. So I was the baby of the house, and I was the one that was spoiled and all that stuff. And
was or still is?
Present tense. So I grew up in that environment. I think I had a good childhood. You know, I don't think my parents were perfect, but I do know that they loved me and they took care of me. I went to Catholic private high school. The way school systems work in Panama, you don't go to like a middle school, then you go to high school. It's one whole thing, like one building that has the whole thing. So I went to that same school my entire life. And when the school started, it was brand new. And slowly but surely, it became more of like high society kind of like school. But when I started, it was nowhere like that. Actually, the owners of that school were used to be administrators in a different school, and they left because that's what the school became. Mm-hmm. And then they went and started their own school, and it became the same thing. Yes. So I grew up in that environment, and high school was hard for me, I think, because there's a lot of like status, like who had money. There was not that much unity, but it was like, oh, who had the most money? And I think even the popular kids not like each other. And then like I still remember like when I was a senior in high school, like this idea of like unity, like, oh yeah, we like each other. So I was like, no, we don't. You know? And then I was just like happy to get out of there. And I think the reason why I stayed was because the education of that school was so good. My odds of getting to a better college was if I stayed there, you know. And it turned out to be true, because years later, I applied to Linenwood, and for non-English native speakers, they make you take a test in order to see your like English level. It's called TOEFL.
TIFF.
TOEFL.
TOEFL.
Yeah, I don't know how to say it, but yeah. It's an acronym, and they knew what school I came from, and they said, you don't need to take that test. So, I mean, it turned out to be a good deal, and kind of, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think if I think about, like, the biggest event that affected my life growing up was my parents' divorce. Actually, my parents got divorced twice. Once when I was, I want to say grade school. I don't really remember much of it.
Yeah.
And then the second time is when I was a senior in high school. I think it was hard because for people that have been seniors, you kind of get in this mindset, oh, this is my year. You know, things are going to happen. You're supposed to be thinking about colleges. You're supposed to be thinking about all that stuff. And I still remember, like, dealing with the drama of the divorce, like picking sides, like, oh, who are you going to live with and stuff like that. And I think that was hard for me because all I could think of was, I just want to get out of there, you know?
Right.
And I remember all the college application stuff. I 100% did all of it. All I was doing, my dad signing stuff, kind of a thing. Like, hey, just signed this kind of, and they were dealing with that kind of stuff. And so yeah, and I ended up here at Lindenwood, and that, and I don't know about you, James, but when I first moved to the U.S., the first year living here was without a doubt the hardest year I've ever been a part of, because I was living in a different country, first time living, not living with my parents. And I did not know absolutely nobody. And I remember thinking, first year at Lindenwood, I was like, what have I done? I don't want this, you know? And just thinking about, like, I immediately wanted to be part of a group of friends. Mm-hmm. And I met some people and we hung out. But then I remember when I was, for people that go to Lindenwood, we do this thing called freshman experience. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like this introduction to, like, the university, and you do things or whatever. And one of the videos they did, it was showing Kerry Cox as the student activities director. And he did one of his, like, freshman events things or whatever. And my back was hurting real bad. And I knew he was staff. And I remember thinking, like, well, he's supposed to help me because he works here. I don't know. So I went and talked to him, and I was like, hey, do you mind taking me to Walgreens or something to get something that my back was bothering? It turned out to be a back spasm, but at the time, I just thought my back was hurting. And he introduced me to a few people of the campus ministry, and they gave me a ride there. And I remember that same evening inviting me to church and then CrossFit, and immediately I wanted to be part of that. So it was kind of like God said that I believe that God set that moment, you know, for me to meet God through the Crossings Church. So
yeah, going back to the divorce, this is the second time we've had pretty much of a similar story, but from what I'm hearing, it sounds like yours wasn't as normal as maybe the previous episode. Like, did you ever feel like you had to carry the burden? I know you did, but, like more specifically, did you have to feel like you had to carry the burden of not even just the divorce, but, like, taking care of your siblings, like, your older brothers or your older sisters?
You know, not really. Yeah. I think everybody was kind of on their own about that, and we all handle it differently. Mm. And I think I was kind of, I think we're all, including myself, selfish about it. Because we were all thinking about what we wanted, our needs, and all that stuff. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, how would you cope with that?
I really, when I was dealing with it, a lot of it was denial. I was like, oh, I'm not gonna let this affect me. I know I've seen people gone through it, but I'm not gonna get upset. I'm not gonna get depressed. Whatever the case is, I remember going to the gym or whatever. And eventually it did get to me because I was not talking about it. I was not, like, I didn't have relationships where I have people that I can talk to me about those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I remember I started going out with friends, started, like, drinking a lot, started getting myself in trouble, you know, so. And eventually, like, I blame myself for the divorce, which I look back at it and I thought it was dumb, but it seems like a natural behavior for people going through that.
Yeah.
I've kind of been in a similar experience. My senior year of high school, we moved from Illinois to Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you were saying, like, your senior year, like, you know, that's the end, like, of high school. You're thinking about college, like, you know. And so moving to a different school your senior year and having to make new friends, like, it just really sucks. And then not only that, but, like, the circumstances were kind of sucky too. And, like, you know, there's a lot of relationships and stuff that were lost, you know, because of the move. And, I don't think I really coped with it the best either. I kind of just shut it off, was like, yeah, you know, like, this doesn't bother me. And I remember just, you know, listening to music throughout the school and not talking to anybody. But, you know, it does affect you more than you think. Like, mm-hmm. you know, different experiences. And when you shut off like that, like, you think you're protecting yourself, but really it's, you know, it's affecting you more than you think.
For sure. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And then, so did you see that, like, the way you coped with it, did you kind of see that linger into when you finally moved over to Lindenwood, as far as, like, the relationships around you? Like, as far as, like, the denial and trying to take care of yourself, looking out for yourself and stuff like that.
I think so, yeah. I definitely think, like, my freshman year at Lindenwood, and I think to a certain level I can still struggle with it, but, like, being very selfish, it was, like, all about me and getting that attention from everybody. And, like, on social circles, it was like I wanted to be the center of attention with things. And, you know, it's funny you ask that question because I never connected the dots on why I did it. But you asking that question, I was like, I guess that makes sense now. Yeah.
And the reason why I asked is because, and my parents were never divorced, but in a lot of ways, I had mentioned before that they were there for me physically and they were there for me financially. They always put a roof over my head. They took care of me very well. But oftentimes I felt like they weren't there for me mentally and they weren't there for me most certainly spiritually. And through my senior year, I had to do a lot of that stuff by myself. Like, I had to find my own college. I had to fill out my own applications. Really, my dad signed the application and paid for it. That's the only thing he did. And then moving to Lindenwood, moving to Missouri, like, I had to go through, I had to figure out how to make friends by myself. I had to figure out how to get through life by myself. I moved here with no friends, no money. All I knew was, I barely even knew the campus. I mean, I've talked about this before, but I didn't preview the school before I got here. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I'm stuck in St. Charles. I didn't have a car. And, you know, I look at that and it's like, man, I got to take care of myself. Because if not, then, like, I'm done. Like, I'm screwed. I'm stuck here, you know. And I don't know. I guess when you draw the connection, it's like, I don't know. And that I felt like I kind of could relate to you in a way of, like, mm-hmm. like how growing up, like, maybe your parents were there physically because of the divorce, but you had to still take care of yourself somehow.
Right. Right. And I think my mindset was, like, I definitely relate with that feeling of independence, you know. And I think for me, my mindset is wanting to start new, and I wanted to, like, be away from that environment and be my own man. You know, and I think I just kept thinking, like, if I stayed in that environment, I was going to be the result of that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think even before meeting God, one of the things I've always wanted to is not repeat the same stuff my parents did. Like, again, like, I love my parents. They're not perfect, but there's certain things, like, I look at them, I was like, I don't want to mimic those things. And, I mean, I think everyone in this room have heard the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. And yeah. I think a lot about that, you know, because I remember when I was little with my sisters and I would see my parents fight and we would talk to each other and we'd be like, hey, you know what? We'll never be like them, you know. And those were one of those things that always stuck in my head. And again, I love my parents, but there's just certain things where I realize, like, that's not the kind of person I want to be, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree with you saying on that. Like, I was ready to move out when I was 17. I flew all the way here by myself. And here, funny story. so my dad gave me $1,000 cash. And then, so I know nothing about America. I don't do research. I just flew all the way here. Went to LA. The first like food that I ate was Burger King, and I didn't know what dollar bill looked like. So I asked the guy in front of me. I was like, "Is that what you used here? Like currency?" It was so embarrassing. But anyway, that's just funny. But what I was gonna say, like you say, you're ready to get out because you don't want to be like your parents or something like that. Mm-hmm. But like, it's the same way here. But I can see myself like doing the same thing that they did.
Right.
It just scared a thing to me. So I have to like look back and just remind myself that that's something that I don't want to be.
Mm-hmm. So. Dude, it gets worse when you have kids. Really. You're like, man, I sound exactly like them.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's interesting you say that, James, because we were on vacation with my family, and it was the first time Caitlin was hanging out with them for an extended amount of time. And she kind of noticed some of the things my dad did that I did too. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's just funny things, you know? Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
I think the cool thing though, it's like being part of God's family. It's like you have people in your life that can hold you accountable and like hold you to a godly standard to help you work through those things, you know? And I think if you ask anybody that is a parent, they'll tell you, yeah, I want my kids to be a better version of me, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I say this, I really don't want to sound like as an insult to them, but it's more like if you ask them, they would tell you, I want my kids to be a better version of me, you know? And, you know, if, you know, when it does happen for me, I would say the same thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that already too. Like, I'm not even married. I'm just dating, but like, you know, you see traits in each other already, like yeah. that resemble the parents. And I think that's another cool thing about just being in relationships in God's kingdom is like, yeah, we notice those things, but you know, we hold each other accountable or we challenge each other. Or we give each other grace. Like there's growth, and not that relationships in the world don't have that, but it's less common, you know. Mm-hmm. It's either swept under the rug where it becomes issues and leads to divorce later down the road, or fights, or you know, just different stuff. So yeah
sure. So going back, so now you're at Lindenwood, right, in this part of the story, and then you said that you got introduced to the campus ministry. What was that experience like as far as like going through that?
Yeah, so it's funny because I think there's a couple of things that happened to me that kind of affected the way I view the group. I think the first thing is like I 100% want to be part of a group. And I saw a big group and I was like, yes, 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 yes. And I just wanted a group of friends. And I think for me, I joke about it. I was like, oh, I was an easy sell, you know, like sell in the aspect of like I wanted to be part of them, you know. But mm-hmm. I think the deeper level that really engaged me was, I remember, so we have this thing called CrossChat where it's like a Bible lesson that, you know, we get together once a week and we hang out, but there's like a little Bible lesson. And I still remember, and this is 12 years ago, and I still remember like it's yesterday, when we were doing a discussion of some scripture, as like one of the girls said, like, hey, I just want to be able to have a good marriage. Like, the question was, why do you want to have a relationship with God? And the girl answered, because I want to have a good marriage. And she was talking about how growing up, like, she didn't have the best example of that. And I kept thinking, that has been in my heart for a while at that moment. And when I heard her say that, I was like, man, I think that's the answer, you know? And throughout that time, I was sold in that aspect because I was like, okay, this is it. This is what you need to do. You need to follow God, and I'm able to be different, you know? And I think throughout my walk with God, I think I was, at first, I think it took me a while to understand it, to bigger, to more depth to it. And I think I am grateful for the patience people had with me. For people that did not know me like 10, 12 years ago, the Lord has done some work in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd require a lot of patience, love, and I still remember like it was yesterday. Like, I used to get really close to people when I was having conversations. There's this SNL skit where I don't know if anybody has seen it, but they like, as a joke, they talked like really close to each other, and that was like literally me. And there was this my friend Ryan. We used to be roommates back in the day when he first started coming to the campus ministry and started getting to know God and, you know, the church and all that stuff. He was new, so he was like getting to know people. I would get very close to him and like have conversations like that. And then my friend Chewy, shout out to him, I remember one time he approached me. He's like, "Hey dude, you know, you make him really uncomfortable when he does stuff like that." And you know, we laugh about it, and I think it's great, and I'm grateful for those conversations because it led me to where I am today, you know. But at the time I was furious. I was like, "How dare you say that to me?" But then I kind of like digested the information. I was like, "Yeah, he has a point," you know.
Yeah.
So and what's the hug story?
Oh man. You know, I've erased that mostly out of my brain. There's our friend.
Now I'm curious. Now I really want to know what's up.
How dare you, Ryan?
He really doesn't want to answer this question.
No, I'm getting embarrassed right now. I can't. You know, I didn't tell you the truth. I don't remember all the details, but I had a hard time having a friendship with a certain person. And I finally got to the point where I built her trust where we can just be friends. And mm-hmm. again, I'll rewind. You know, I had issues with personal space with people. So you can only imagine if a girl doesn't like usually a hug from a guy, period, then I'm like a whole new level, you know. So there's that.
Yeah.
And I think at the time, I honestly, I don't remember all the details, but I think at the time I saw that I gained her trust. So I said, "Hey, I like full frontal hugs." And then I got banned from hugs forever. Yeah. So.
Well, don't worry, friend. You can hug me anytime.
Sweet.
So also, I want to bring up and mention, and Ryan, remember, correct me if I'm wrong, in an episode with Max, we talked about he had an instance where Max was coming around and they would go to a room and watch movies. Mm-hmm. You remember Max talking about that? Mm-hmm. Was that in Fernando's room?
No, I believe that was in Max's room. Oh, okay. That's why that story is so funny. Because
people came to his room.
Gotcha. And he left them there.
Gotcha. Okay.
And he came back. They were still there.
Okay, so never mind. But Fernando, you had a very interesting room that I remember with Ryan Gross, mm-hmm. the person you just mentioned, Alfredo Luna, right? I think that's his last name.
Molina,
that's right. Yeah. And I remember going into that room and I remember hearing stories about the TV, the couch, the game systems, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was that about?
I mean, that was a great time. That was probably one of the funnest time I had in college.
Yeah.
So we lived in for people who live in Lindenwood, we lived in Matthews. And we were.
That's honestly the best dorm. It really is.
Yeah, for sure. We lived in, I think it was a third or fourth floor. I think it was a third floor. And it was one of the three-person rooms that mm-hmm. was like an L shape. And the way the room was designed is you're supposed to put like a bed in each corner or whatever. But what we did is we triple bunk bed. So it was like a regular bunk bed, but then the bottom was just a mattress. And so we had different roommates. So it started with me, Ryan Gross, and then our friend Evan. But then Evan got married like maybe a semester in, and then Aldo moved in.
Okay.
So we quote unquote rotated. Like who will get the top bunk, but it was mostly me all the time. So there's that.
So is it good to be on top or bottom?
Well, in this case, top, middle, or bottom.
Right.
Because it was three tiers.
Oh, the bottom was the best one because it was a cold.
Because I would pick the middle.
Well, you still had to climb because the actual like bed frame had to be tall enough for the bottom one to sneak in.
I'm thinking about the space that when I wake up.
Oh, dude! If you were in the in the top bunk bed, it was terrifying because you would open your eyes and the ceiling is like right in front of you.
I live with Ryan's. You know how like if I turn my body. It's my elbow already touched the ceiling. And the ceiling is not the most smooth.
Oh, yeah, popcorn ceiling?
Yeah, it's...
That's the best kind of ceiling.
So, and then the next summer, we have our friend Ryan coming in. Mm-hmm. So I look good. I was like, Ryan, I give you the bed.
I got him.
And I sleep on the floor for like a couple of days. It hurt my back, but I don't have to twist and hit the ceiling. Right. So I think that's worth it.
Right.
And then
such a servant. And then
I went upstairs and took the couch, like the padding from the couch down so I can sleep on that. But I think Colleen just probably Colleen is Ryan's mom. She probably like I'm just done with that. I'm gonna go get you some bed. So we she got mattress for me, so I sleep on the floor since then.
That's
so sweet.
Yeah. But the reason why I mentioned the room is because I've been in that room and I've seen a lot of guys and come in that room and you know in Maddie's episode we talked about Stumberg and how purposeful that was and in a way your room was that too, like you guys always had people over in your room, you guys always played, I mean there was a lot of fights because of the video games but you guys had a lot of people in and out of there and you've had some pretty good relationships form because of the time you had there. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a great environment that we created. We definitely had our bickering like anybody else, but we have a couple of people that I remember. Juan Pablo, shout out to him. He was he was about the same age as I was, and he would come over, play video games. And then Corey, our friend Corey, would like live like a couple of doors away, but he will always be there. And I still remember Corey was the only one with a car. So Corey would be hanging out in the, like our room and we'd be like doing whatever. And then Juan Pablo would come in, play like video games for like 5 minutes. And then he'd be like, Corey, can you give me a ride to Taco Bell? And it happened like once every other day. And Corey knew it was coming. And he's like, dude, all he wants me to do is give him a ride to Taco Bell.
Yeah. But there's a good friendship in that.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think like we had a group of people that I felt like we made a difference. Yeah. I wish some stuff could have gone different, like on my side, but
like what?
I think more follow up with them on like involving got more in their life. You know, I think for myself, I can speak. I got comfortable with the relationship part where like, hey, he's my friend. But I don't think I brought it to the next level. Like, hey, maybe you should have God in your life.
Like the more purposeful
side. Right, right. So I think I stayed in that comfort zone with a fear of like, well, if I introduce that, how is he going to feel about it? Kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So with
that being said, now moving to current events, right? So how does that change though? Because so now you're going on this church plant, but how did you get from where you had those, you kind of missed on some opportunities at Lindenwood to now like you can't really miss those opportunities because that's basically the foundation of the church plant. Like
right.
You have to capitalize on every opportunity you get to grow the church. Right. So how'd you get from that point to this point?
I think for me, it's kind of like a decision you make. I was part of the youth ministry for like about 2 years. And I remember I led a small group of middle schoolers. And I remember everybody struggling with bringing people to CrossShed. And one of the things I always told them is like, hey, you know what? It's not going to feel good. It's not going to be comfortable. But you have to make a decision that you're going to do that regardless of how you feel. You know, and I think back then for me, it was a lot of feeling based stuff. Mm-hmm. But like being more like, hey, no matter how, I know the importance of this, so I'm going to do it. And I'm going to be happy with the fact that I attempted and not like failed. Because I think there was a part of me where I had a fear of failure, where like, oh, this is going to be awkward, this is going to suck. And I think trusting God that no matter what, like I was going to, you know, attempt to make a difference in their life, you know.
So when you mentioned the youth ministry, what was you were a leader in the youth ministry. How different was that? So you go from being in the campus ministry to being with people like your age.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you go to the youth ministry, and then it's like people, kids younger, literally kids younger than you. Like, how did you balance that as far as like trying to get the interaction with people like your age?
I think that's challenging. Definitely, yeah. Is. I think one of the things I try to do is have intentional relationships with people.
Yeah.
One of the things that when I was asked to do youth ministry, I knew exactly, I had no idea what I was doing, but I had the heart for it, you know. And one of the things I realized was I needed people in my life in order to give something back. Because if all I did was hang out with kids, I had nothing to give them, because usually my spiritual meal, quote unquote meal, will come out of my relationship with people, you know. Mm-hmm. So if I don't have people in my life who are like, hey, Fernando, like working on my individual things, but also how I do as a leader, you know, and always seeking that wisdom, you know. So mm-hmm. always admitting you don't have it all together and you need people in your life, I think it's the best thing, best decision mindset, I guess, would be that you can do, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think it's so easy to be a youth leader and be like, well, you know, I'm a youth leader, so I'm superior, or whatever the case mm-hmm. is. When honestly, if you look at scripture, it's the complete opposite. You are a servant to them, you know, and it's this sense of responsibility where there's a certain level where you're responsible for their eternity,
mm-hmm.
depending on how much you try. And, you know, with the middle school, it's difficult because you can get into this mindset, oh, I'm going to hang out with this kid every single day. We're going to read the Bible every single day. And you think, oh, they're going to commit their life to God. It's going to be great. But 9 times out of 10, it doesn't happen, yeah. You know?
Yeah, like, how do you, like, because I imagine that with adults or, like, maybe older people, it's a little bit easier to do that. But, like, when you have a youth ministry or even, like, when you think about kids in general, there's just a lot of distractions. Like, why mm-hmm. would I want to go to a Bible study when right. I can play 2K20
That's
all
right.
day, all night, right?
But really, the distractions never end. They just become yeah. different when you get older.
Right. So, like, how did you combat that?
I think for me is this sense of I did everything I could.
Yeah.
I think there's a bigger fear of feeling like you could have done more rather than it did not work out. And, you know, knowing that it's not my talent or like, oh, I'm such an awesome leader that's going to get them to Christ, but it's God.
Yeah.
You know, like admitting that you're his tool, and that's something I got to remember every day, you know, because with my own insecurities, I never feel like, oh, you know, I'm not good enough. I don't have enough Bible knowledge to help those people. But at the end of the day, it's not you, but it's God using you, mm-hmm. you know. So.
Yeah. So I would imagine that through some of the learning that you've had through being in the youth ministry is now applicable to the church plant that you're on. Right, in a lot of ways. So like, so you're in the process of the church plant. So you're not quite there yet, as far as like you're not in Columbia, you're not there full time, and you're still kind of going through some training,
mm-hmm.
right? So what's the process been like for you? Because I mean, if you want to talk about it, like if there's could you explain like what the process or what it looks like to plant a church?
Sure. I mean, that's a pretty that's a long answer I can give you, but I'm happy to answer. Go ahead.
Or if you maybe it'd be easier to talk about like some difficulties or fears you're already facing, even though you haven't gone there yet.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So I think being part of the Columbia Church Plan is definitely being challenging. I think for me, there's a lot of initially I did not know the people in the team very well. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it was just people that did not know each other, and they just paired them up. And I think for me, there's a sense of are they going to be able to do it, or am I going to be able to be the man God needs me to be to serve the function that the church needs me for it to keep running properly. Mm-hmm. I think I'm an overthinker. I don't know if listeners have kind of put that together, but I overthink a lot and I kind of overanalyze. But I think a lot goes back to my time when I was part of the Annabelle Church Plan team. Was it when you guys leave, 2014?
14.
Yeah. I was part of the team, and I did the training, and I think I did a whole year of training. I think that was a whole year.
Yeah, I think we
maybe were, less.
I think we planted. I think you actually came with us, right?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
And I went through the whole training, and at the time I was dating a girl, and when I got selected, I remember they told me, hey, you're in the team, but is it going to be a problem that your girlfriend is not going to go? And I said, yeah, that's no problem. And that was a lie, because it became a problem later on. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things throughout the training was I kept thinking about it, and I never was open with people about those feelings, you know, because in the back of my head, I kept thinking, well, you know, they're eventually going to add her. It's going to be fine, you know, whatever. And then I got to a point where I realized they were not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And I made the decision at the time to leave the church plan. And I definitely regret doing that, because I was not using relationships around me. And I think even more how I affected the church plant, you know, and going into this Columbia church plant, I'm trying to get more in a mindset of being part of helping out rather than what can the church plant give me. Mm-hmm. And I think I look back at that time when I was part of the Interbuild plan, and I realized that I had a mindset of a taker, you know, and going into Columbia and understanding what, you know, quote unquote leader looks like. It's more of a servant. Mm-hmm. So instead of taking, I need to make sure I'm giving, you know, and making sure I'm analyzing how my behavior affects others, my relationships. And like, we get into small groups with adults, and if I have any issues, my first thing is like, well, I don't want that issue I have with that person affect the church plan, so let me just talk about it and just get in the open and just be done with it. So it wouldn't be like, well, I hate Ryan, so I'm not going to tell him for a year. And yeah, then blow up at him, you know. So those kind of things.
Do you kind of see a difference as far as like the process goes between like when you were leaving for the Interbelt versus when you're leaving for Columbia, as far as like the process goes, or like some of the more finer detail of that?
I thought it was going to be easier because I was familiar with it.
You're a professional church planner.
Yeah. Heck yeah. I thought it was going to be easier, but it feels so much more difficult.
Yeah.
I think before I was just a kid and I had no idea what I was signing up to. Now I'm an adult. I've been paying bills for a while. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. you know?
And I think in a lot of ways from the outside looking in, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, in a lot of ways, you have more of a responsibility on the Columbia church plant than you did on the Interbelt, as far as like, because you know, you had mentioned earlier that you were doing studies, and then you were going there, and you're like committing a 4-hour drive to like meet somebody you don't know at the moment. Mm-hmm. But as far as like what it was at the Interbelt, it's like, I can give up 20 minutes to go drive and hang out in Del Mar Loop for a little bit and then drive back because it's not as far.
Right.
But, you know, with it being a little bit further away, it's like you literally got to make that sacrifice financially, got to make that sacrifice with your time, and maybe some of like your relationships might be jeopardized because now you're not hanging out with some of your close friends anymore.
Right.
Then even like you said that you had just left the youth ministry. Mm-hmm. because you're planning the church plant. And so, like, now you're not being able to hang out with some of those kids, might lose some of those relationships, you know. Like, in a way, you are, you have a bigger responsibility as far as, like, the, I want to err on the side of caution in saying that the success of the church plant relies on your shoulders, but in a lot of ways it kind of does,
mm-hmm.
right? Because, and as you know now, like, it's kind of hard to be selfish in a church plant because, one, it's so small, and then everybody knows, like, what's going on in your life, so to speak. And then, two, it's like, if you're dragging, like, everybody's got to drag you and the people, like, the other people, like, maybe, like, new members or, like, guests and stuff like that. And it's a lot harder, mm-hmm. would you say?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder in the sense that I'm aware of it now. I think when I was in the interview plan, those things still apply, but I was not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, if I wasn't, like, I don't think there was a level of stress there. But now that I'm aware of how my actions can affect others and the plant, then there's a sense of more stress because it's weird because there's a sense of performance, but at the same time, there has to be faith in the equation, you know? So it's kind of a weird balance that I gotta add because I don't want to make it about my control, but at the same time, there has to be a sense of learning how to control my actions, you know?
Yeah, and then your actions are not even just your actions because now you have a wife.
Right.
Right, so now you got to think about the both of you.
Right.
Right. How does she feel about, or how was that for her whenever you guys started deciding that you wanted to go on this church plant?
You know, honestly, she challenged my faith.
Really?
Because she was the one pushing more than I was. We were at church. There was a service where they gave out, like, little things. Like, hey, you want to go on the plant? Yes, no. Whatever leadership wants me to do. She was saying yes, and she was all about it. I had a hard time with it because I felt like the work I was doing in the youth ministry was purposeful, making a difference in kids' lives. So I felt like in kingdom-minded things, the value of my job was not going to change, you know? Mm-hmm. So I responded like, well, whatever leadership would like me to do. And she was excited. She's like, oh yeah, we're going to Columbia, whatever. And I was like, oh, okay. And I mean, I've changed my attitude about it, mm-hmm. mostly. And one of the things my friend Mackie says a lot is doing a lot of faith-based decisions, you know? And it's challenging to me. Because I love control. I want to know where things are. I want to be able to handle things. And one thing that God has challenged my faith, it's making faith-based decisions, you know. And my friend Maggie always talks about how God's going to take care of you. He's going to do all this really cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think the worst out of every situation in order to protect my expectations, you know. And then God lately has been doing pretty cool things in my life. And I just keep thinking, like, I don't deserve any of this stuff. And, like, I just keep thinking, like, nowhere in the Bible says, well, we're going to take care of Fernando. And it's just this sense of, like, are you sure? You know? So.
Yeah. And when you say Mackie, and I'm just for.
Sure.
For background, Mackie, your friend, is Mackie Shedd, who's leading the church plant.
Right. Right. Right.
So it's kind of cool because, and not to go too deep into your relationship with Mackie, but you and Mackie don't have a long relationship, but it's kind of cool that you guys are doing this church plant together because that there has to be some sense of trust in that and then leaning on each other. And it's kind of cool to see your relationship form in such a quick time period, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that was probably the most challenging thing for me to do because I did not know him. Mm-hmm. I knew of him, and I'm more the kind of guy like I want to get to know you, and then I'll follow you. Yeah. You know, and I think God knew that, and he's like, no, you're not doing that. You know, and it's been cool seeing, like, you know, being able to get to know him, and you know, and following him to all those things.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
So you talked about how your wife challenges you a lot on the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're married now. In what ways have you seen a reflection of your parents and yourself, and like how you dealt with those? Does that make sense? Because we were talking earlier in the episode, we were talking about like how you feared to be like your parents,
mm-hmm,
or
right.
You know, you wanted something different, and you that question at Cross that really kind of like hooked you in. Like, how have you seen yourself at times becoming like your parents, and how have you like combated that?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the things, well, I mentioned just a minute ago, the control aspect of it, you know, mm-hmm. like I definitely struggle with that. That's one of the traits I noticed that me and my dad share a lot, you know, and there's mm-hmm. like certain levels of it. But Caitlin's really patient with it. She helps, challenges me with those things. But at the same time, like I'm the guy that like she'd be eating something, and then as soon as she's done eating, I'll put it on the dishwasher. Or if she's not done eating, like I'll be grabbing the plate, and she's like, "I'm not done with it." And literally, my dad does that with my stepmom and her kids and uh-huh. all that stuff. She'd be like, "I'm not done eating. Let me finish what I'm eating," or whatever. So I think the way I combat it is trusting her with more things. Mm-hmm. I think definitely working on that trust. And you know, it's ironic because I definitely think with marriages in general, trust is like probably the first thing you need to work on.
Yeah,
you know. Well, and yeah. And I think working on that trust aspect, definitely like giving her responsibilities, like knowing that she'll take care of those things, you know. Mm-hmm. And not being like, "Oh, I'll take care of it," because it's not gonna get done, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes like our arguments. We're like, I take control of that, whatever that is, mm-hmm. versus like giving her a chance, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because from the outside looking in, and if people know your guys as a relationship, you guys balance each other out in a lot of different ways, and it's like a perfect scale, like a tiered scale, because like your guys are. Now, I wouldn't say that you guys are opposites, but like she complements a lot of your weaknesses and you complement a lot of her weaknesses in a way, which is really cool. And, you know, in terms of like thinking about the church plan, it's cool to see like how your relationship is going to be effective in Colombia.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate you saying that. I definitely see that, you know, and it's interesting, like learning from her and learning from each other during that process, you know.
And what's cool about that too is that because you guys are able to do that in a way, like one of the like my mantra in my life is like breaking cycles, mm-hmm. and I like you get to break a cycle, like because of how your relationship with Caitlin is, because it's so strong and committed and united in a lot of ways through Christ and through biblical principles, and you guys are honest with each other, you guys balance each other out, you guys communicate really well, and now you guys get to do church plant together, which right. is like a completely different level of a relationship. But before we get to the last question, what's the scouting report on Colombia? What can we look forward to there? Like what's Colombia like for people who don't know what Colombia is like?
You know, I'm still kind of brand new to it, and so a little bit of a hard question to answer.
Yeah.
But I think once you go to the place where the university is,
you're telling me a story when you're walking in that you got lost. So that's how new you are to Colombia.
Right? Oh yeah, I'm like brand new. I was getting upset because a lot of the parking lots are like one way, like how you know, like how they like angle it in, so you have to come in from a certain mm-hmm. way, and it was driving me nuts. And then there was like four-way streets, and if you want to turn left, you gotta wait for like three lanes to not be going so you can go in there, of a thing. And so that was driving me a little bit crazy, but the urban lifestyle is pretty cool. It's not a huge urban area, but once you're in there, it's a pretty cool place to be at. I think there's a lot of cool restaurants. There's a trail, it's called the MKT trail, that it's kind of like the Katy trail, but it seems to be massive. So yeah, I guess Katy Trail is big too. But
yeah,
I think you're forgetting the biggest part of Columbia.
Oh, Mizzou.
Mizzou. It's yeah, a big campus town.
Well, and then when football season is on, like, everybody goes watch Mizzou Tigers games, and that's yeah, a cool, because like the stadium is like almost in the middle of the city, so you, when you drive around the city, you will see it, mm-hmm, yeah, you know, so it's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah,
like I like to watch sports, so every time you see a stadium that's in the city, it's pretty special, because a lot of those properties are like from like a million years ago, so for you to get a hold of that property, good luck with that, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. Maybe we can go on a double date, and Shannon can give you guys a tour.
Yeah,
get some nachos.
She can tell you how to get around from a phone. That's how much she loves Columbia. She knows that place inside and out, and a lot of her family lives around that area too.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, but well, before how we conclude every podcast or episode, we ask the question, you know, knowing what you know today, what would you tell your younger self?
Yeah, actually, I thought a lot about that question. I know every time I would listen to your episodes, I would think a different answer.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things I've struggled throughout my whole life is the sense of like people loving me, you know, and having this performance-based relationship where I had to be a certain person for you to like me, you know, and I think what I would tell my younger self is that be yourself, people love you, and I think more importantly, God loves you, you know, and sounds kind of basic message, but I think to me, it would have helped me a lot through a lot of struggles I went through. So
yeah. Well, Fernando, thank you for your time. It's been fun.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Well, this is Brewing Narrative signing off. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
See ya.
So by now, your coffee cup is probably pretty low, so I'll keep this short. Thank you for listening in. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and leave a comment. We'd love to hear how these stories are impacting your life. For more content like this, you can follow us at Brewing Narrative on Facebook and Instagram.